And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 202. Welcome to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Folks, today it is just me. Samantha's on assignment. I have an interview today with the director of a new documentary. It just came out actually today as I'm recording this intro, and I'll release it today. But June 14th, it came out, End of the Line. It's a documentary directed by Emmett Adler, who is the guest. And it is a documentary about the New York subway, the L line, and some controversies that have happened over the years. I know you're saying, what? You're doing a documentary about what? Or the subway? Yes, that's initially what I thought when I first read it. Then I watched the trailer. This is a compelling political drama. I mean, it's real, but it's drama in New York over the subway, and had no idea the bureaucracy. I don't know if bureaucracy is the right word for it, but the absolute craziness in managing the subway, and in particular this L line in New York, which I guess apparently, shutting it down affects some historically disadvantaged groups, marginalized communities, and their access to the city. And it's crazy. It's one of the issues that got Cynthia Nixon, who I had no idea did this. Cynthia Nixon ran against Cuomo for the governorship in the primary. Yeah, the Sex and the City star. Yeah, I didn't know either. So, but I learned this, and I learned a lot more watching this documentary, and so it was fascinating. So I was like, can I talk to the director about this? And I got an interview, and that's what we played today. Today's the interview with Emmett Adler of End of the Line. So, yeah, big thanks to all of you out there for listening. I know episodes not out as frequently, but if you want reviews, you got to go to the website. Go to the website, blackandahalf.com. And I've been writing reviews out, haven't been out here reading them as much. Maybe I should read them. I don't know. I feel like it's scripted. But I need to write them and get them out. So go there if you want to see documentaries. Just put it out for Lightyear, the new film Lightyear, Pixar film. And, Maverick is up there, Top Gun Maverick. Everyone's talking about that. I'll try to figure out how to get... I've got some things in the process for movie reviews. So things are in the works. Stay tuned. More to come on that. But in the meantime, I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon supporters, Tara Widener, Keith Nagel, Stefan Ward. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And again, if you too want to become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners, for as little as $1 a month, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/blackandahalf, and become a supporter of the show. So there. Okay. That's my pitch for today. That's all I'm going to do. A lot's going on in the world. I'd love to talk about it, and we'll get Samantha on here soon to talk about it as we reposition what we're doing on here and everything. So much going on. It's very, very exciting, actually. But let's get right into the interview. Okay. So here he is, for episode number 202, End of the Line, with director Emmett Adler.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
The inspiration. Are you a native New Yorker? Is that?
So I grew up in Chicago. I moved to New York in 2010 and lived there for 10 years until 2020. I'm back in Chicago now, but the inspiration was really that I was living off of the L train line of the New York subway. For the 10 years that I lived in New York, I never owned a car and I took the subway everywhere for everything. And around 2016, I was living off the L line and there was this local crisis that unfolded that was basically going to sever the line that I took to get to and from work every day and the line that 400,000 other New Yorkers took every day. So massive population. It was going to cut it off from the broader system. And I thought, this is crazy. There are so many people like me. It was like everyone I knew, this was like a major crisis in their lives. It was going to choke off a lot of businesses. And so I took my camera and tried to find out a little bit more about what was going on. And as we dug deeper, like the entire system started to crumble and trains started to derail and there started to be power failures and the governor proclaimed a state of emergency. And then there was a power struggle and then the pandemic happened. And before I knew it, it was 2021 and we had been filming for 5 years and the product is this film.
That it's as somebody who lives in Seattle, where we are just starting to get a train system. It's, I find the whole process kind of fascinating on just the magnitude to think of how this was built and how everyone relies on it so much. So that was the appeal to me about the film is like, well, what's going to happen to us in 40, 50 years? The fighting, because we fought just to not have one because in Seattle, we like traffic. We want to sit in traffic for long, long numbers of hours. Is this your first documentary feature?
This was my directing debut. Yeah, I specialize as an editor, so I've edited some features, but this was the first time where I was the lead creative force behind it.
Have you always been drawn to documentaries in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. Always like loved watching them. Have been working in the field and sort of like trying to make documentaries for like as long as I can remember now.
I remember my father tried to convince me to be a documentary filmmaker when I was younger. He had this idea, which I don't know why he never did it. He thought I could just get a grant. He's like, just get a grant and then you pay yourself and you can buy equipment with that. So go do it. And so for about 2 years, I told people I was going to be a documentary filmmaker. Now I just like reality TV. That's the closest I come to that. Now that you've tackled the subway, do you feel like, are you going to be tackling next other transportation systems? Or do you think, or would you prefer like gorillas? Or like how do you see documentaries going?
Yeah, well, this was such a long process and took so many surprising twists and turns. I don't know if I would tie my livelihood to a public works project next time. I'm still thinking about what's next. I definitely have an interest in cities, but I don't know. It probably won't be transit, to be honest. It'll probably be something different.
5 years is a long, long time to be working on one.
Yeah.
Without hobbits involved, I haven't heard of another thing lasting that long. Like, why? How did you keep yourself going? Like, were you just shooting, hoping a story would develop, or did you have a plan in place to see where it would go, or?
Yeah. So, you know, what you'll hear a lot of filmmakers say to people who are sort of considering their first feature film is like, you have to pick up the camera, just pick it up and start go. So that's what I did. And there was even a process as an editor, I'm not even used to necessarily operating a camera. So there was even a process of sort of learning on the job to operate the camera. I did have partners on this who were really skilled people. Luckily, I was working, you know, in the industry, so I knew a lot of really talented people who were willing to some degree to lend their time. I think what kept me going is that, you know, we were chasing this story and it was ever evolving, and it was clear that there was drama, you know, that there was just wild things kind of unfolding in front of our cameras. This is not a realm, you know, there's not a lot of cinematic documentaries made about transit out there. And it's not something that normally occurs to people, I think, to, you know, who want to make a commercial, enjoyable documentary that's interesting to people broadly. But, you know, what it boils down to is like political infighting and themes that are, you know, common across America, you know, and as you were able to relate to it in Seattle. And, you know, we have a national infrastructure problem and have for some time now. And this is really a microcosm or a case study in that.
Well, as a New Yorker, like, actually, one thing I didn't know is I completely missed that Cynthia Nixon challenged the governor for the seat. And I was a fan of hers. I didn't even catch that. Like, was that a surprise as a New Yorker that she jumped into the race, or is she pretty vocal there?
Yeah, I mean, I was not, you know, honestly all that like aware, but she has been sort of a vocal a lot about schools and associated with the Working Families Party, which is a political, you know, pretty far left political organization in New York. I did not, you know, see her run for governor coming, but it made for some good television.
You made me Google things, because when I watched it, I was like, I got to find out. Is she a part? Like, first I was like, do I have the wrong person? Is she just like a dead, like, giveaway?
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting film. Like the subject, I don't know. You did a great job with the trailer too, because that drew, I usually watch the trailers of things before I bother with to see if I want to interview somebody. And the trailer just drew me in, and I was like trying to tell my wife, no, we're going to sit down and watch a documentary about a subway for serious. Like, no, this is going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
Then what was the most surprising thing that happened to you while you were filming this?
Well, there's a situation. I think just like the conflict that arose between, you had this like top transit executive in the West that New York Governor Cuomo hired, and the fact that they ended up clashing and that it fell out really publicly, and some of the, you know, there was a crisis in there that was like suddenly reversed. I mean, that situation, you know, and I don't want to ruin too much of the film, but there is just like in it, there's a incident where like, you know, this crisis that we've been building up to for years is overnight changes. And the governor tells us that. My phone exploded at the time, and it was another one of those, you know, like, uh-oh, do we still have a film moments? The similar thing. I mean, obviously the pandemic surprised us all.
Yeah.
And that factors into the film. But that was another like, oh God, do we still have a film moment too?
I mean, imagine you'd find a story, right? Like, I guess that's kind of, or is that just the scary part about this type of documentary? It did seem there was almost like, I felt like watching it, the pandemic was almost like an epilogue to this, right? Because it was going along, and then suddenly there was this stoppage, and they're like, wait, this isn't over. But, and then we get into the pandemic, how it changes everything. What do you, I guess it was hard. I don't even know if this, because you put at the end about the messages about the transit workers who died and stuff, but I don't even know. I'm like, we're in 2022 now, right? What, I don't know what happened. Like, are they still working on the subway? Is it fixed?
Oh, yeah.
Did that whole, like, your governor's changed now, right? Did they go through with the plan of just reinforcing it, or is it Is there a fight over GO trains?
I mean, no, it's a steep hill to climb for sure. And I think they're still definitely working on it. They have reinstituted now a lot of the initial plans that transit expert Byford, who, you know, was driven out by the governor. They sort of picked up where he left off after the governor left, after Governor Cuomo left. You know, there's been the massive investment by the Biden administration, which we haven't entirely started to see that money. You know, the pandemic kind of put subway systems, like major transit systems, on life support because they lost their ridership, and ridership has not fully rebounded. When I started making this film, 5 million people were riding the New York subway every single day, and they were all paying. So, or not all of them, there's a lot said about people who, you know, fare jump, but they're not, last I checked, I think they're maybe not north of 3 million at this point. So that makes a huge impact on the budget. They're still spending pandemic money. And then there's this looming major infrastructure investment that is supposed to come down from the Biden administration's $1 trillion infrastructure plan. You know, I think we're in a period of change where we won't know what the story is for like another decade, but it could be a very big story. It could be the type of thing that we look back on as like other times in history when FDR invested in America's infrastructure or when Eisenhower built the highway system. I think that is the type of moment we're in. We just don't realize it yet, and it hasn't quite been delivered at this point.
I've only been to New York twice, and I've used the subway each time. But like, is it a social class product there? Like, I mean, do the upper class in society or in economics, do they use? Is the subway used by everybody there? Because it just seems, I don't get how you get around the city without the subway. Like, it seems nightmarish to me. But on Million Dollar Listing, that's how I know mostly about New York. They're never on the subway. Does everybody use it?
So, I mean, you know, it's changed over time, I would say. You know, New York the subway system fancied itself the great equalizer. You know, the idea being that, yes, everyone used it, from the Wall Street executive to the street sweeper. You know, sort of around the time I started filming this documentary, you know, Mayor Bloomberg, Mike Bloomberg, the billionaire, famously rode the subway to City Hall every day during his tenure and was a champion of the system. I would say with the pandemic, with more people who have high-paying jobs working from home, that has changed. There's been a rise in crime recently, and there's big-time concerns about violence in the subway. Unfortunately, you know, I think this perception is changing a bit. And the truth is, like, the lower class, or whatever you want to call it, lower-income folks have always been the most reliant on the subway, because they don't, you know, if the subway is broken down any given day, which was happening all the time back in the midst of the subway crisis, like, if you have money, you can call an Uber, and it won't get there as fast as like a functioning subway would, but you have that option. And you know, if you're a lower income person, you may not have that option. So, you know, it's always been that those are the people who rely on it the most. The million-dollar listing people who live in Manhattan, a lot of them could walk or bike to work because they live in Manhattan. Okay. If you're traveling in from Brooklyn, Queens, Harlem, you know, places that are further from the economic centers of New York, you rely on the subway, and you're more likely to rely on the subway.
Okay. I think end of the line is a very fascinating documentary. I think people should check it out. We always reserve a little time in our interviews to get to know the filmmaker a little bit. And so here at Black and a Half, we always ask our world famous seven questions. Okay. So your seven questions to get to know you a little bit. You don't have to think too much about them. But here they are. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Transit.
Transit? Was this before the film? Were you playing with little subway Legos or something?
No, not before the film. Before the film, probably documentaries, I guess, is maybe what I would say. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, love it.
Yeah.
What's something that you love to eat?
Oh man. I want to say like the first thing that comes to mind is like pizza, but I'm Jewish and I like matzo ball soup and tuna melts quite a lot.
I've never had matzo ball soup. I need to try that. All right. What's something that you love to drink?
Beer.
Beer? Okay. Any like a light beer? Or a dart, like
depending on mood. Like right now, I could use a light beer,
like a Schlitz light, or are you?
Like a Peroni light.
Okay,
would be nice. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
What kind of music do you love?
I really like hip hop and R&B music and folk music.
Oh, okay, I like that combo. Especially with
I don't like to be pigeonholed, so yeah. I try to, you know. Okay.
What do you love to create?
Well, films is what I spend like 90% of my time creating. So I would say that.
Is there what is it about films that draws you in?
I think it's the first, it's the craft. That, you know, I just have a knack for it. I like doing what I'm good at, and I found my niche here. And then the reveal aspect, that when it's done, I can reveal it to the world and show it to my friends, and it's like out there and they can look at it and be like, that's, I did that.
Excellent. Hey, number six, what's a game you love to play?
What game? You know, I'm really into golf these days. I picked up golf in recent years, and I'm starting to turn a corner on my game, my irons. You know, I could finally kind of hit a straight shot once in a while. So right. I'm gonna go golf.
I love it. I'm currently building a little miniature golf hole in my front yard right now.
Wow, that's a fun yard.
Yeah, because I'm in a suburb, so that's things that you do as a dad. You build a golf course in your front yard.
That's a good one.
And last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Come on, man. I want to be remembered for making great films and for connecting filmmakers. I'm involved in some networking organizations that help to build the documentary film community, specifically an organization called the Video Consortium. And, I care a lot about just like building up the industry and providing opportunities for people to sort of take the path that I've taken.
Excellent. Good. We'll remember you for that and for your new film, End of the Line, coming out very shortly.
One week from today, June 14th.
June 14th, on demand everywhere. We're gonna watch it.
Yeah, it'll be on definitely on like Apple TV, Amazon, and most places where you get your films from. Yeah, and you can follow us on like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at End of Line Doc. So without the at End of Line Doc to get updates. About where exactly you can watch the film and behind the scenes stuff about the characters and all that good stuff.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And that was it. That was the interview. So I thought it went well. Thought it was fun. There was a little hiccup in the beginning. I forgot to hit record when I started talking to him. It took me a couple seconds to catch up. But mostly, all the meat's there. Juicy, unedited, unfiltered. The real truth. Hard-hitting journalism from Soslin and Stein and Black and a Half. And yeah, so thanks for tuning in. You're always appreciated. More interviews to come. More fun times. More good times. Until next time. Black and a Half. Live long, live long, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper.